Hi, everybody. Welcome to Mormonish. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Landon.
And this is a very important and very special episode that we are doing today. We have some incredible guests who we are absolutely honored that they are on Mormonish podcast. We have David Sant. Hello, David.
Hey, everyone.
We have Jesse Givens. Hi, Jesse.
Hi.
And we have Taylor Pace.
What up?
All right, what up? And I will say we are recording this on a Sunday, or as some of us like to call second Saturday morning. So we are diehards getting up to do this. So, but this is really important. These wonderful people here on the episode today are involved in the production and creation of an incredible documentary. David is the director, Jesse is the director of photography, and Taylor is the producer. This documentary is called A Long Way From Heaven. I have podcasted about this before on Mormonish and also on the Mormon newscast, trying to get the word out about this incredible documentary that details the last couple years of BYU and the things that have happened in terms of the LGBTQ community. I think most of us have been following this. They were able to premiere this documentary over the weekend at Thanksgiving Point in a theater that was absolutely packed, wasn't it, Landon? We
It
were so
was. It was great.
excited.
It was a great experience. You guys did a great job on that.
It was incredible. The vibe there was just amazing. So I think before we go any further, we're going to show you the trailer from this documentary so you can kind of get just a little taste of what we're talking about. And then we'll dive more into the creation of it and who these wonderful people are and just everything about the documentary. It's really good, everybody.
This has gone on too long. These kids are still facing such risk just to be out shining a light on a piece of rock.
You don't understand what's happening there. If we weren't there, I don't even know what would happen to these kids.
They're simply saying, please don't treat me like this anymore. That gets framed as hostile.
If you love an institution, it is your responsibility to make it better. If you love your family, are you going to stay quiet as someone endures abuse?
Even watching that, I still just tear up and get the goosebumps. It's, because I think we've all, those of us that are podcasting, we've been watching this scenario at BYU over the last couple of years just so closely with almost just mouth open going, what are they doing? So this is just incredible. And as I said, there was a premiere for this documentary at Thanksgiving Point, packed house. Everybody was just so overwhelmed in the audience. The documentary is absolutely incredible. So let's just start by asking everybody, and you guys can all just chime in. This is a very conversational podcast. Tell us how this idea, this concept even began, when it began. Let's just start learning more about the whole project.
I think this whole thing starts with Taylor, so I'm gonna let him take this one.
I was gonna say, do you want to take it or do you want me to?
You got it.
When the Rainbow Y, or I guess let me back up a little bit. When the honor code changes thing happened, however long ago it was, it feels like a lifetime ago. I was a student at UVU, and I was actually attending. Hilariously, I've never actually explained this because I forgot until just this moment. I think I was attending one of Benjamin Park's, and I didn't know who he was at the time, but like one of his. I don't know. He had a new book. I can't remember what it was called, Mormon Kingdom or something like
Kingdom of
that.
Nauvoo,
Kingdom of
what?
Nauvoo.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that
yeah,
was the
yeah.
era. Yeah.
And I was attending, and I don't remember how I even heard about it, but I was attending an event, and then I was on Twitter, and I was seeing some stuff happening on Twitter, and I was like, "Oh my God, like, what's going on?" And I'm a social work student, so at the time I was going through my social work program. I think I either was just before or like right beginning my bachelor program, and I was seeing the stuff happen on Twitter, and I was like, dude, I need to go to this. And I had like this little internal conflict of, what if I miss class? And I was like, can we swear on this podcast, by the way? Is that allowed? Okay, fucking cool. Anyway, so I was like, dude, this is real fucking social work. Why would I go to class if I could just go do the real thing? So I ditched like the rest of the day at college and was at the protests. I went to the one at BYU and I went to the one at the church headquarters, which inevitably ended up with me getting in. I don't know exactly how this worked out, but I knew Bradley Talbot and because of that participation, he invited me to of the Google Doc that was for the Rainbow Y. And I don't remember how long before he had sent it to me. I think it was like 2 or so weeks before the actual event was happening. And so he filled me in on what was going to go on. I helped him out with making sure that it all got taken care of. And so the honor code changes directly, you know, in the like the bait and switch, the rescind of that honor code language being removed, obviously inspired the Rainbow Y thing, as the documentary explained. And so I was just a part of that. And then after we got done with that, I knew David. We've known each other for a few years. And just, you know, one of the times that all of our buddies got together, we were talking about the Rainbow Y, and I was like, oh yeah, like I was a part of it. And David punched me. He didn't actually punch me, but he was like, what the hell, man?
I thought about it. I was like, why didn't you invite me, dude? Yeah.
But we were trying to do something like super secretive, right? So it was difficult to, and I mean, I invited some people, but for some reason, David just did not like pop up in my head. I don't know why. So I was
closeted. I don't know why I would have popped up in your head.
Were you attending BYU at that time, or had you already left? Okay, maybe that's why you didn't think about it.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm like
too problematic.
There's also probably just the sheer fact that I just didn't think about it. Like, there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason as to why the remember is not on my side on some cases. So anyway, but I was like, hey, I want to do something about it though, because I think it'd be cool to do like a little 15-minute behind the scenes type short film of like the making of how we got the Rainbow Y to happen, because it was pretty, the story is like comically serendipitous. Like it is so funny to me as to like all the things that like lined up to make it happen. I got bit by a dog. That was pretty funny to me. And anyway, so he was like, yeah, let's do it. And then, you know, we made we worked up a little bit of a, like a storyboard, so to speak, not like a physical one, but just like in our brain. Mm-hmm. And we did our first round of interviews. Celebrate Therapy was very lovely. Dr. Lacey Bagley was very lovely to let us use their beautiful space in Provo at the time. And we did the first round of interviews. And just after that, me and David were like, dude, we have to do more than just this. Like, this is more than just a behind the scenes thing. On top of the fact that like BYU kept doing things, like they kept being BYU. And so like we were, BYU would do things that were directly related to like, or in consequence of the Rainbow Y and the honor code changes. And so David and I were just like, we have to make this bigger. Like it's so related. And so it kind of snowballed into what you guys saw yesterday night.
I wonder if I could just ask, when we're talking about the things that happened at BYU, maybe just for our viewers and listeners, maybe you could detail just very quickly, first of all, the change in the honor code, what that means, what that was, you know, then the decision to do the white. Let's just tell people just real quick in a nutshell what these events are that we're talking about. I mean, we all know, of course, because we're living here, we're living with it. But they're, you know, just maybe explain whichever of you want to take that. What happened just very quickly? Because like you said, BYU kept being BYU.
I've got this one to a T.
Okay, here we go. David's got it. He's going to do it.
February 19th, 2020 is when they removed the clause that banned homosexual expression of romantic feeling. And BYU was left for like 2-3 weeks with no clarification or anything from either the Honor Code office or from CES or from, you know, the church as a whole. March 4th, they finally made the clarification. But in that time, that I think more than 2 weeks, a bunch of students had come out of the closet and begun dating because they thought it was safe. And immediately repercussions followed for a lot of those students. And we include some of those stories in the film, far from all of them. This created an extremely tense winter and spring and summer semester. And then at the beginning of fall semester on August 23rd, 2021, Jeffrey R. Holland gives a talk to the faculty in which he calls for metaphorical musket fire in defense of heterosexual marriage and traditional values.
Before you go on, I think it is important to mention that the honor people did go check in with the honor code office in that 2 week period where they were like, hey, like, are we cool? And the honor code office did tell them that it was okay.
So yeah, on that subject, I think that that'll be a question we should talk about later, because I've actually received some really interesting additional context just last night from somebody who may or may not be at BYU and knew a lot more than what we were able to find out while we made the film. So we can come back around to that.
Just kidding. Don't listen to me.
But it was total confusion. And for those of us on the outside reading articles and things, we were like, oh my goodness, they've changed everything, which having gone to BYU, I thought this is incredible. And then you see these pictures and these stories of these students, you know, free to express themselves and love their partner openly. And then you hear stories of how they did go to standards and got the okay. Yes, we think even professors, some went on record saying, yes, we believe this is what's happening. And then suddenly, what happened next?
Yes. And so, yeah, as a result, they everything, huge protests, obviously, in March of 2020. Everything was really, really, really building to a pretty high point. And then COVID killed the entire progress of everything that was going on for an entire year. And so the Lighting of the Y actually happened sort of on the tail of COVID, March 4th, the exact 1 year anniversary of the clarification, 2021. And so that why sort of reignited everything in, into sort of a post-COVID world. And then Jeffrey R. Holland issued his what we call the musket fire talk, colloquially, on August 23rd, 2021, just a couple of months after. And since then, it has just been a snowballing of like weird policy reversals and reinstatements and protests and sort of lukewarm responses from the administration. And it's been a lot of little things that have snowballed since then. But I think that's the impetus right there.
You're going to have to make a part two. And I will say, for those of you that don't know what lighting the Y means, the Y, of course, is a giant Y on the side of the mountain to represent Brigham Young, BYU. And it's typically lit up in white lights for games and homecoming and very exciting. Well, as you kind of got the idea, some really brilliant students decided, let's just hold lights up there and light it as a rainbow. It was incredible. I saw it in real time. And, you know, of course, then the policies come out. Oh, no, you can't even stand there and hold a flashlight. So.
Yeah, the documentary then started as a way to document the Light the Y, and then it expanded. Is that correct? Because you really did a great job telling the whole story of what led up to that and why. And I think you're right. You had to include that to really see why was this important? Why was this so significant? And you did a great job in explaining that and even showing how you did it. That was one of the questions. I'm like, how did they do that? You know, or are they just up there with, you know, flashlights they bought at Walmart? But those were some pretty high end, and you measured everything out and had it all figured out. It was quite impressive. But the thing I learned that I thought was especially interesting is that they had signed when they took the Y on the mountain that they had promised that everyone would have access to it. Yeah. And yet there they are with their police officers ready to issue fines and misdemeanors and tickets and arrests if necessary for something when they made an agreement that everyone would have access to that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was mostly scare tactics. I'm going to be so honest with you. Yeah. Like the third lighting of the Y where we did the transgender colors as well. Yes. When BYU stopped doing their voice therapy program, there was a guy that came up and like went to each person and was like, hey, I'm gonna have to ask you to, you know, leave. And we said, no, and nothing happened. So I think it was just more scare tactics above anything else, but we wanted to make sure that people were still like safe, because there was at least in some way a threat of getting arrested. So that was a fun night.
I think, the questionable ethics of BYU having its own police force is something to discuss another time.
Yes, absolutely. That's
one of Landon's soapbox.
Yes.
Yeah.
It gets really feisty when we think and talk about that, which is just crazy. And then when you, like we learned on our documentary that we did with several men who lived at BYU back in the 80s who were closeted, you know, that BYU police force used to drive to Salt Lake and go to places where people would hang out and take license plates. I mean, they were really tracking people, which the ethics of that are so questionable.
Literal entrapment.
I heard
in the documentary, we say the police drove 50 miles to entrap certain students. Yeah. And the number is higher than that. They went much further than that.
Yep, I'm sure it is. And I was there, I've said before, in starting in 84, and there was, you know, the Wilkinson Center there was the big place where they would try to entrap people. And I mean, they went to great lengths. It was just, it was really unconscionable what they were doing. So it's important to shine this spotlight on it. And I will say to everybody, as we mentioned, this musket talk, which caused so much concern, this actual incitement of violence. And I looked up the article and someone had done a little study on it, like 8 times it mentions, you know, there's just all, you know, so many, there's, I should pull it up on my phone, but the stats of how many times he talks about violence or wounds or scarring or, you know, just this violent, violent rhetoric, you know, and to protect BYU and protect the church. And unfortunately, maybe a lot of you might be aware, you know, they let everyone know this was just for faculty and staff, you know, that's all. But no, it's not. Ironically, on the day that the documentary premiered, which would have been last Friday, we learned that that talk is now going to be required reading for all incoming freshmen at BYU in a class kind of to orient students. And they say it's to show the purpose and mission of BYU. This talk represents the purpose and mission of BYU. And I think all of us are just still stunned about that. And I can't believe the timing that, that again, this talk has reared its ugly head. I mean, how not in tune do you have to be to put this back on the stage? How? I mean, what are your thoughts of that, about that? Could you believe that when that came out that morning? Were you guys just going, no?
Well,
it is. Yeah,
we knew about it before, but sorry, go ahead, David.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I just had a quick thing to say and then I'll hand it off to Jesse. But it's comically ridiculous because they saw what happened last time this talk was given immediately. You know, within days, there is that huge movement, which I'll describe for the sake of people who haven't seen the film or know about this.
Thank you.
Days after the talk, a huge group of queer and allied students came and painted the sidewalk on the south edge of campus, all in really supportive, beautiful messages about like loving yourself and like it's okay to be queer and God loves you and you have a place here. And that night students were coming up and pouring water over the chalk drawings to erase them. This was on the news, made national news, saying slurs. Like there's one video of a man pouring a water bottle over the chalk saying, go to hell. And that is the kind of rhetoric that a talk like that inspires. I am positive Jeffrey R. Holland did not mean go out and be violent against queer people. But I am also positive Jeffrey R. Holland understands that everything he says over a pulpit is magnified 10 times by the constituents he's speaking to. He understands the lengths people will go based on their interpretation of his words. And so it's a wildly irresponsible thing for him to do.
Yep. Yeah, they have a PR team too. Like someone greenlit that talk. And there's no way they don't know the like climate of BYU. And right. Like, for instance, what's the word I'm looking for? The like rise of DESNAT and their iconography.
Very violent. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah. As Taylor was alluding to earlier, we actually had a little bit of inside knowledge that this was going to be happening like a month ago or something. Somebody was saying that they had heard that this was becoming part of the, you know, foundational curriculum for freshmen coming in. I remember as soon as we heard that, I just floored and speechless. I remember that day I was just calling all my friends at BYU and who had graduated, saying like this terrible, terrible thing is coming back. And we were just, you know, mourning together, because I remember when that talk came out, I was still technically active in the church, but I was, I didn't even know what to think. Especially given that the lighting of the Y was, you know, around that time, I was feeling so much love for the LGBTQ+ community at BYU. Then all of a sudden this thing just comes in and it's like, a leader of the church that I'd respected my whole life is just being so hateful in a way that seems so ignorant, but also kind of targeted. So, yeah, the fact that this is coming around again, I just horrifying.
Ugh. Horrifying. And I have to say, you know, I think it had this impact, like you said, on even faithful people could kind of see through it. I remember meeting a friend at the grocery store. She's someone my age, and she's very, very faithful. I've never heard her say anything contrary to what anyone has said. And as we kind of pushed our carts together, she goes, "What did you think of that talk from President Holland?" And I thought for sure that she would say, "Wasn't that wonderful or beautiful?" So I kind of said, "Oh boy, that was interesting." You know, I kind of made it very subtle. She goes, "That was horrible. I couldn't believe it. I have never heard her say anything about anything that the church had come out and spoken. And here she is, and she's comfortable enough and so shocked by this that she's coming right out and saying, this is ridiculous." And so I just can't fathom that they didn't understand that reaction the first time around. And here it is again. And I don't know. So I do know people are, I think they're starting to protest. I think they're writing letters, or I think they're trying to see if something can happen. So we'll see. Well, there may be another actual physical protest.
I think that's why this documentary that you did is so important.
Yeah.
Because they're going to start studying that talk next year, I think it is, for the incoming freshman. So next year they're going to start talking about that. And your film is going to be released publicly, I think you said January timeframe. Yeah. Those students at BYU are going to watch this film, whether it's on Netflix or Hulu, or they have to go on YouTube to watch it. I don't know. I hope it's Netflix or Hulu, but they're going to watch it. It's going to get passed around, and they're going to see the difference in the message and from what you guys did and what the church leaders are doing and how they treated you guys when they took and bait and switched and pulled that information and what happened. So This documentary is so important because it's going to show that position. And I don't see a caring human being who can't watch this and say, that was just wrong what they did to these people. And it's wrong what they did to the students. And that talk has nothing to do with love. It does not demonstrate apostolic leadership in the least. It's hateful. It's wrong. And people are going to see that. And that's going to make your documentary that much more important as people watch it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know this, actually, but Maddie Easton just tweeted the other day that the whole talk is not actually going to be required reading. It's an abridged version.
Yeah, I heard lightly edited.
Oh,
lightly edited, but still with the Musket reference. So I would like to read the lightly edited talk and see, you know, exactly.
Yeah, he posted some screenshots of like the things that were edited out, and it's really interesting what they chose to keep versus I don't know.
It's strange. Yeah, for those of you who need context, Maddie Easton was a valedictorian who was invited to give a graduation speech in 2019. And in that graduation speech, which was fully approved by the faculty beforehand, he referred to himself as a gay son of God and was met with, you know, thunderous applause. Maybe not as thunderous as other places would have been, but it was a beautiful moment, I think. And that talk was referenced by Jeffrey R. Holland in his Musket Fires talk when he said, "When a student commandeers a podium in order to announce his or her sexual preference, what is that like, in essence, what is that going to turn commencement into? What is that going to turn graduation into? Is anything going to go?" Which I think is also an irresponsible thing to say about queer identity, because simply saying you are queer, that's not anything goes. That's just saying you love who you are. But anyways, point being, the things that they removed from the talk, they removed the reference to Maddie Easton about commandeering a podium.
Okay.
They removed.
Interesting.
They removed specifically one phrase about, like, a lot of people are confused about what this flag waving and sign holding might mean.
Yes.
And I think they removed one other sentence. But yeah, they kept every bit of the musket fire rhetoric. Oh, and they removed the fact that Holland was actually quoting Dallin H. Oakes. Dallin H. Oakes is the original coiner of the musket fire phrase.
Interesting.
And it's sort of funny how they sort of shouldered the responsibility back onto Holland for that, because they removed that Holland mentioned he was quoting Oakes.
In other words, what they removed was to protect them, not to protect the students.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah,
for sure. Wow. That's really interesting. I'll have to look for those screenshots. Yeah, I'll have to look at Maddie's things. So yeah, and that, I thought your documentary did such a good job of covering all the pieces of that era, because like I said, we followed it, we podcasted, we were watching, but to see it all put together like that, you're like, oh, that's right, Maddie. Oh, and Julian, I'd forgotten about her. You know, explain who Julian is. That was an amazing moment too.
Yeah, Julian Orr is a student in 2022 in April, also at graduation. Who sewed a pride flag into the inside of her graduation robe. When she was receiving her diploma, she opened up a robe and showed the pride. Super controversial at the time at BYU, but made national news and was a huge statement of like, post all of this, because this was just a few months after the musket fire talk. It was a way of saying, post all of this, there still is a place for us here. And, you know, there's still people who love you. Huge moment.
It's funny to me that that was controversial, because I go to, I've got kids graduating college, believe it or not, I don't, but as I go, it's amazing how the kids my kids are Weber State, some the ones that are graduating recently, and all the kids are taking the hat, and they're decorating it with all kinds of things to express their own identity and who they are, you know, mama, and has their kids' names on it and different things. So that's pretty much a tradition everywhere else, to kind of, you know, personalize your graduation gear. But at BYU, if you show anything like that, that is against their teachings or what they perceive, then yeah, it just goes, to a whole level beyond that.
It's a private school, Landon. They can do whatever they want.
Yep.
Well, absolutely. And that was an important part of the documentary, I thought, too. Kimberly, who I also know and am friends with, just, and maybe you guys can talk about this, just the situation the staff and faculty find themselves in, you know, because there are supporters there. As Kimberly talked about, she took a lot of flack for, you know, affiliating with BYU and trying to work there and help students. But then she was saying, like, if I'm not there, what happens? You know, so I think it's such a delicate balance. Jobs are on the line, tenure's on the line. I mean, these people are absolute heroes who are there trying to do what they can for that community. Talk about some of your interactions with faculty or staff, or just maybe explain, you know, that very delicate balance that they're trying to, the tightrope they're trying to walk to support and help where it's desperately needed.
Yeah. Something I'd love to make more clear, maybe in sequential or subsequent films, is that BYU is such a highly fractured institution right now. They seem monolithic because of the way they present in the news. But you wouldn't believe how many allied people are working in the Underground Railroad, as it's frequently called at BYU, to just create either create a safe place for queer students or get them safely out before they're traumatized for life, which doesn't happen enough. But people are helping. Several members of BYU's faculty quite literally put their jobs on the line to help us with this film. I just received additional information last night that there are, I'm obviously not going to name names, but there are people even within the Honor Code office that are trying right now to make things better for queer students, and who genuinely believed that it was okay for queer students to date when that clause was removed. For those of you who don't understand all the intricate workings of BYU, which I don't, the Honor Code office and the officers are one level, and the church educational system is their administrative higher ups. The Honor Code office works for BYU, but the church educational system, or CES, works for the church directly. And obviously the church owns and funds BYU. And so that clarification statement was issued by CES to the Honor Code office with absolutely no warning, with an order to publish immediately.
Wow.
And so a lot of these Honor Code officers have been taking the fire for years for this clarification statement that damaged people, when in reality, it was CES who issued no official statement for 2 weeks and then forced the Honor Code office to publish this underneath their own name. And so there's so much complicated nuance going on, so much push and pull, like a genuinely splitting at the seams institution trying to figure out this issue. So anyways, it's more complicated than it seems. And there are people at BYU that are safe. They're just hard to find because they have to hide.
Right. And as you showed in your documentary, several have actually been let go, have been removed, fired from their faculty or their staff position, simply for mentioning that they may have a child in that community, or I don't know, wearing a flag or putting, you know, it's, so I think we just need to make sure that everybody understands, like you said, BYU is fractured. Not everybody across the board, people, their hands are tied. Let's just say that. I used to work there too, and my hands are tied. Everybody's hands are tied. So it's been going on for decades.
One thing I've learned as I've been doing this for the last year and a half on doing these podcasts is, as I watch the churches, they never change anything or make anything not clear unless there's a reason that they're doing that. And as I was watching the film, as you said, you know, that they pulled that, I leaned over to, I was sitting next to Rob Lauer, and I leaned over to him and I said, well, that's got to be because they were going to go into the Big Ten and they didn't want written policies of discrimination, yet they still want to be able to discriminate. And by doing this policy, that's exactly what they were able to do. And then as soon as I said that, you addressed that in the film. Do you still believe that or see that as probably the reason behind that change? The church obviously gives other explanations, but that's a real convenient way to not have a written policy, but still have a policy that they can enforce.
How critical do you want me to be?
No, speak
you
freely.
Can say whatever you want.
Well, so first, I'm a social worker. I am a therapist in the community, and you know, as such, I'm pretty plugged into kind of like social issue and whatnot, and. To me, that alongside they were losing job listings for faculty because of their honor code. I think that I 100% think that's why. I don't know if there's ever going to be a situation as to like that proves why they did that. But to me, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You know, when I think it's Mary Oliver, she has a quote that says like when someone tells you who they are, believe them. And I don't think there are any other explanations as to like why they'd want to do that without trying to, you know, have look good but still be shitty. I don't know. Yeah. It's what makes Jesse's quote. I don't know if you guys know this, but Jesse has a bomb ass quote in the beginning of the film during the intro where they say, I wish that I could just shit on this institution endlessly. And it's just like an evil institution, but it's not. There are good people in it. Right. And that's what makes it complicated. So I was curious. I've Jesse has.
Jesse, I want to say that the opening shot with the mountain and that aerial view, I don't know if that was a drone or how you guys got that shot, but that was just right from the beginning. It just overwhelming with the big mountain and the Y. It just opened up and you just went, wow. So great, really great cinematography there. And you had some great, great shots and different things. So just wanted to compliment you on that.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. I wish that I had actually been able to shoot that Y shot. Actually, David, where did we get that Y shot? Can you tell me now?
That's a drone shot that we actually acquired from somebody else because of we had to deal with a lot of legal red tape.
We couldn't film
anything on campus or above Provo.
That's right.
But we were allowed to use material that had already been filmed on campus and above Provo. That's a drone shot that we acquired from someone else. But we're really, really happy.
How can they limit you from shots from above? They don't control the airspace.
No, yes, they do.
they control the airspace above campus, property, for a certain.
It goes up to the sky, up to Kolob. Well, but just putting that together and recognizing that to start with that was just so, I mean, you know, I got emotional even at that first scene because I spent decades at BYU. I was a student there. I worked there for a long time. So I'm like, you know, here it is. And from the air, it looks just beautiful. And then as you get down, then you find out what's there. So, and in fact, I don't know if you're comfortable sharing, but I know Jesse, you have a very interesting story as a BYU student that kind of goes right along lines. But would you like to kind of tell some of your experiences at BYU? I think it really, I'm sure it must have informed how you put this together in a cinematic way. I mean, it had to, and that came across to all of us. That's why the whole audience was in tears the entire time, I think.
Well, absolutely. So as far as my experience with BYU goes, I was enrolled with them for about 5 years. I was studying athletic training, and then I moved to film, which is where I was until I wasn't. But I was starting to gain some distance from the church emotionally, and also realizing, you know, my own relationship with my sexuality. And I went to my bishop in the winter of 2023 to express some misgivings and how I felt about that. And ultimately, his answer to me was, well, then I can't endorse you to continue at BYU.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, is there no other way? And he's like, there is no other way.
No other way.
I went into that semester not feeling like this is the end. And then I actually was able to work with some of the faculty that wanted to help me. Actually, they were like, hey, let's try to find a way around this. Maybe we can keep you here. This is also when I was getting involved with the documentary, and I knew that like my relationship with BYU was already strained, and I already didn't like them for a bunch of stuff. But I actually got a meeting with the head of the Honor Code office, Kevin Utt, to talk about my enrollment, if I could stay, if there is any way for me to stay. And he brought up what BYU's mission statement was, and it's that BYU is designed to prepare people for exaltation. And if you're not in line with that as a member of the church, then we don't want you here. So at that point, I was like, okay, well, good riddance. I don't want to be with you either.
Yeah.
and so, I was like, well, this is really disappointing. This is the end of my BYU career, as spoken to me by the head of the Honor Code office. I tried to transfer to UVU. They basically said I'd have to start over. And so, you know, being kicked out of BYU kind of unceremoniously about a year before I was going to finish and get my degree, and with no real way out, I have ended my educational career for now.
So to be clear, you have not graduated and you don't have a path at this point. They basically pulled the rug out from under you because of your sexuality.
Yeah, that's how I would clarify it. Yeah. And with no real way to transfer the credits, because they're just different kind of programs.
And yeah, one clarification I want to make, just because I know how gross people are in comment sections. We want to clarify that Jesse at this time was a married person living in adherence to the Honor Code, and was not dating anyone of the same gender, simply removed from BYU because they were struggling with their faith. And it's snowballed from there. That's just a clarification I want to make.
No, because, that's important. It's important to share the detail. Yep.
People in the comments are always like, well, they must have gotten kicked out because they were sinning. And it's like, no.
No, you don't have to sin to get kicked out. We all know
that. I think that's the thing that makes it so frustrating, is that there are so many people who have a negative assumption towards those who have had negative experiences at BYU, yes, because they want to think that BYU is this holy institution that's geared towards helping people obtain exaltation. And I'll be hella critical. They suck. Like, they are discriminatory and they don't care. And sure, the institution is fractured, but there are hundreds, if not thousands, of stories like Jesse where the students did nothing wrong. Like, I have a friend that personally, they got sexually assaulted and they got kicked out because they had sex before marriage.
Yeah.
And they had to do a bachelor program basically all over again because they were the same situation. They were about to graduate from BYU and then they moved to California and they basically did another bachelor's program because of it. So Anyway,
yeah, it's your life. It's your education. And I think a clue to all this is back in the Musket talk where Holland seemed really concerned about the, as he calls it, donars, the donors and the parents, you know, and what will they think? They have got to keep this facade, this purity, you know, nothing, anything that doesn't fit that some of these donors or parents, or they're going to try to get rid of it. They just have to keep this image. And it's just, I know there's so many, now I'm starting to think of all the stories we've covered and talked about, right, Landon, on our podcast. And you're right, that purity culture and the sexual assault issues, those are huge. And again, decades. I think about, again, that podcast we did with the five gay men who are wonderful theater students back in 79. And they said that, you know, friends would be in class one day and the next day they'd be gone. They'd been kicked out or they just slipped away into the night, you know, and that's not even electroshock therapy, which they also knew people that underwent that. But these are just people that just are ripped out of the institution in the mid path of their career. And then what do you do next? And I know people are taking note of this. I remember a Reddit post about a year ago where this is like on ex-Mormon Reddit and Mormon Reddit, where people were trying to say, how can we support these BYU students? Is there a place that we could all get together, start a website and offer help? You know, and people were all chiming in. They were like, I work in a student financial aid office at another university. I could help people understand, you know, how to transfer their transcripts, or I could help people apply. You know, people were really trying to come together, like you said, an underground railroad kind of situation to try to figure out how somebody like a Jesse, an incredible student, has a year left. How do we help this person finish their education? So I would like to put a call out to anybody listening or watching. We have to figure this out. I mean, if it's a hostile, unsafe place at BYU and you didn't understand that when you entered and you need to leave, we have to figure out how to help people in this way with whatever skills we have. I remember people were writing, I'm really good at writing resumes. I can help you redo this. I can help you write your college letters. You know, people want to help. There's just no organized or mobilized place that they can do it. So it's a real need.
Well, what I'd like to see happen is the UVU would accept credits from BYU.
Yes.
So many, that would give people who have faith crises, who have, you know, the sexuality issues that are going to get them kicked out. It gives them a safe place to go. And I think that the state of Utah owes it to protect those students and should look at that option to make those credits transfer. So people have an option that isn't devastating to their career. The problem is we know the Board of Trustees there wants to have Wendy and Russell Nelson come give their speeches as well at the state-run university, and they're going to do whatever the church says that the church wants, and it's in the church's best interest to give the students no place to go when they kick them out, to try to keep them there and to try to keep them in line. And so, unfortunately, I don't see that happening, but that's certainly a place that that could be taken to and worked within government to try to get the Utah schools to accept BYU
like
credit
across the board. Yeah, that would that would make a big difference. So, all right, we've said it here. Let's get working on this, guys. Come on. So how, back to the film, there's so much to talk around it. How underground were you guys working on it? Like, did friends and family know? I mean, were you, I picture you like in a bunker in a basement with a murder wall where you've got pictures and arrows. We're going to cover this and this and this, you know,
beautiful,
like
mind
how, I mean, exactly.
I don't, I mean, so, yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
You want to go first, David, or?
Yeah, sure. I'll go. So the very first inklings of this film started in 2021 while I was still at BYU. And so we did get a group of students together in very, very secret. And yeah,
bunker.
we in a bunker. We mostly, because it was, you know, still sort of COVID era, communicated online, and we're able to do a little bit there. But then after that, most of those students had to drop out just due to fear, drop out of the project.
Right.
Just out of fear, because actually one of the students in the group that was helping us got kicked out of BYU. Because, long story short, was in a sort of high up student position in their program. And another student, this is some conjecture, but I'm fairly confident here, Another student was jealous of that and wanted that position, and so reported them to the honor code office because this student knew that the higher up was gay. And for the record, this student also was not dating anyone at the time, had never dated a man that I'm aware of, and was kicked out because he said, when asked by the honor code, will you ever consider dating a man? And he said, yes. And so was kicked out of BYU. Anyways, point being, after that happened, that student group that we had totally dissolved. Oh. And so until we brought Jesse on in last year in 2023, it was just me and Taylor doing everything in total secrecy. Like our families didn't know, our friends didn't know. I'd tell people, oh, I'm working on a film about BYU, you know, when asked, when pressed, but yeah, until last year, literally no one but Taylor and I knew, really.
Wow.
I think the length of time of how much this took also helped with that. I mean, like my closest friend, he knew, like he's been there since like day one. His name's Matt. And I've known him for 10, almost 11 years now. So like he obviously knew, but he's completely supportive. But because it was just me and David for this long period of time, and I had gone through, I was going through my bachelor's and master's program, I think that really helped us with being able to like make this lower key, because it was really just incremental movements.
How long did it take from start to finish?
I came to David after the first lighting, and then yesterday.
So yeah, barely under 3 years. Oh, no, barely over 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you fund this? I know it didn't come cheap.
I don't know why I just giggled like that. Don't. Yeah.
We can cut it out, but we won't, because it was so cute.
Well, so, I mean, like, David and I, when we say we did it all, like literally up until the Kickstarter, it was just money from our own pockets / whoever was willing to do things for free, right. Which was incredible because a lot of people were willing to do, like, we didn't pay for the, like I said, Dr. Lacey Bagley, she let us use her space for free. David still had some connections in like the film circle of I guess Utah County, so we got some equipment. Jesse helped us out obviously as well. We had some friends come and help out with interviews just for whatever AV stuff that we needed. So everything that we did, that was another reason why it was a little bit slow moving, is because in between David and I, you know, trying to work to live, we had to deal with other people's schedules and just all that jazz. So,
yeah, a lot of volunteer work. And until the Kickstarter that we ran in January, it came out of our own pockets. So real money, I think we spent $20,000 to $25,000, something around there. In terms of labor, just for, you know, we have to submit to grants. So I have to give like a, what would it have cost had it been paid? And I think we're approaching $190,000.
Oh, wow.
Just in sheer hours, if everyone was paid a professional rate. So
yeah. I'm not surprised. I mean, it is so professionally done. Like, oh, wow. As we sat there watching it, we're like, this can just be on Hulu. I mean, I can be scrolling through Hulu and go, oh, I'm interested. What's that? And it would be like, yeah, this fits right there. It's so professionally done. I can't wait for everybody to be able to see it.
These two, Jesse and David, man, like they're killer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. It was obvious. And Rebecca watches a ton of documentaries. That's thing. So if she's telling you it's right up there, you can believe it, because she watches a lot of these type of documentaries.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think about Mormon No More, you know, that kind of sprung on the scene a couple years ago. Nobody knew where that came from. It was like, oh my, and that featured one of the segments. It was about, if you haven't watched that documentary, everybody, we'll link that in the show notes, Mormon No More on Hulu. But it did feature the lighting of the Y. That was one of the stories. It had some different stories of people in the LDS church or with an LDS background and their experiences. So yeah, it's a story that's, you know, it's just really, really important. But yeah, I wish we could explain to our viewers and listeners just the mood in the theater during the premiere and everybody, you know, how would you describe it, Landon? It was just overwhelming, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very upbeat and positive.
Yeah.
And, everyone very loving, you know,
yes.
Everyone was welcoming,
yes.
Just talking all throughout, not throughout the film.
Right, ahead of time, though. Yeah, like a big family environment. Yeah.
Yeah, the popcorn line was horrible. I have to say that.
Yes, you did. That's right.
Oh, so I barely got there in time. I missed your opening remarks because I was getting popcorn.
Yeah. You know what scene really got me? And I had forgotten this had happened. And like every scene, I was like, oh, yes, I remember that. But when they had the big drag queen event at the park in Provo, and there were protesters, you know, there are always protesters, and how volunteers dressed like angels with giant wings, you know, huge pieces of however they made them, you know, that surrounded the group to protect them from, you know, the hate speech of the protesters. And there was one scene where somebody was standing there with his wings out and someone came up to him just kind of in tears and said, thank you. And I'm just like, oh my God, I should have worn my waterproof mascara to this dang premiere. You should have warned me, David. Just moments like that, it just brought everything back. And when you see all the events of the past couple of years just in this cohesive, you know, creation, it's so important and it's so impactful and it's so special. And maybe talk a little bit about, so the premiere was on Friday night, and now let's just talk about what is going to happen to the film and what your hopes are for it. And then I know everyone's going to be typing in the comments, how do we see this damn thing? How do we get there? So tell us just the trajectory. What is happening now?
Yeah. Okay. So it's a long road to go still. just quick reminder to listeners, we're so sorry you can't watch it immediately. Right. Any distribution plan we get is one that we get because of our marketing ability. That's just how the film industry works. You know, nobody can distribute your film if they've never heard of it. And so our plan right now is to submit this film to as many film festivals as we possibly can, with an emphasis on festivals in Utah, faith-based festivals, and queer festivals. Mm-hmm. As many as we possibly can. Anytime it gets into a festival, we're going to be announcing it all over our social medias, spreading the word so that people will have a chance anytime it's in a festival anywhere to come and watch that. And usually festivals in Utah are very affordable. So that should provide a good opportunity. I have been to festivals in Utah where tickets are cheaper than just going to the movie theater.
Yeah.
So I really recommend that as a means of being able to watch the film. And our hope is once we're into a few festivals, fingers crossed, that then we'll be able to sort of market this film to distributors and see what sort of dissemination we can achieve mm-hmm. with this. And if no one picks it up, we put it on YouTube.
Yes.
And we tell everyone, like, the making money off of this has never been a concern. We just need everyone to see it. We need everyone to see it. And so we just need a distributor because we know they'll do a better job of that than we ever could. So that's our current plan.
That's perfect. And no, it's going to go places. I can tell. It absolutely will. And I myself can think of a couple people that I want to connect you guys with that have experience in that industry. And, you know, we'll just see. So I hope it's okay if I share your contact information with a few people that I know that are in the industry. And I would even say to any viewers and listeners, this is a project worth getting behind. If anyone has any connections or anything, that it would be awesome. And I'm also going to share, if it's okay, however you would like us to share it, your just social media on our show notes so that anybody can, you know, follow you guys and find out more about the project and all of that, because this is so worthwhile for everybody to get behind. It's just absolutely incredible. And you guys are all just going to love this when you eventually get to see it. And I'm hoping it's just a couple months, right? It'll kind of go through the cycle of the film festivals, and then you'll be able to, you know, put it out, and hopefully it'll appear here in Utah. So yeah, we just couldn't be more excited. It's just amazing what you've done. And again, like I said, I attended BYU, you know, I loved BYU in the day for what it was, but then I know, and that's the thing. I think we should say that, although we're talking about BYU critically, it's because we, you know, we went there, we loved it. I had experiences that were negative there, but I also had very many positive experiences. So we hope it can be a better and safer place for people. And this documentary is going to definitely move the needle in that direction, I think. Do you have any final thoughts on everything, Landon?
No, I just appreciate the effort that went into this. It was clearly an act of love. You can tell that from what you guys put together, but you did a fantastic job. Everybody should see this film. It'll tug at your heart, and it'll test your humanity somewhat when you say, is this the way that we should be treating people as an institution of the Lord? And it makes you question, and I think it'll change hearts and minds. So I think you did a wonderful job on it.
Yeah. Also, can I, do you mind if I say, like, we are really into the side of this being like a community led grassroots type of project. So when you say like, we want people to like help out in whatever way they can, that's not just us saying that because it sounds nice.
Yeah.
Like we genuinely, the more that we can make this like a community backed, led, pushed mm-hmm. thing, we're really into that idea. So we want this to be from the community. We want this to not just be like, this is our project, mine, David's and Jesse's. We want it to be like our project, as in like, this is from us. This is from all of us. You know what I mean?
No, that's really important to say. And I'll let everybody know that at the premiere, at the end, I think whichever one of you said it, stand up in the audience if you were in the documentary. And of course, we didn't know that you guys were going to show some clips from Mormonish. So Landon and Rob Lauer and I stand up for like, oh my God, we were in it. You know, it is, you just have this real pride in being a part, even a small part of just, you know, getting this message out. And so it is absolutely, I mean, the sheer number of people that were in it, right?
and most of them were students, it looked like, or student age. Yeah. So it was grassroots. This was student led. And even when I was in the popcorn line, there were a lot of students wearing their pride stuff, and you could tell. Yeah. Who was here for your show?
Yeah.
And everyone was talking and having a conversation. Yeah. It was clear it's student led, and that's the way it should be.
It is. It was great. Any final thoughts from Jesse first, and then David, and then I think we'll wrap up. This has just been amazing.
Yeah. Being part of this project has been so amazing. I feel so honored to even be, you know, being working around these guys. And really, I think that what we're saying, what we're doing here is of the utmost importance, that, and like, hopefully we can make it a priority for people to really think about these things and to, like you said, move the needle a little bit, because things need to change. Taylor has a bomb ass line in the film where it's like, if things aren't happening, if things continue the way that they are, people die. And so we need to stop that. We need to be able to address these issues and make things better for people. And yeah, just, I'm honored to be able to work on this.
Oh, that's great. David, we'll give you the very last word.
Okay, great. Pressure's on.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, this might be, a weird opinion, maybe, just because of, you know, I this podcast is very much more in the post-Mormon space, you know, Mormon-ish. but I do just want to say, like, as much as this issue has in a real way decimated my faith and my ability to see things in a hopeful, faithful way, I still love BYU. And I still love the church, and I want to see them both grow. But when someone you love starts hurting people, you don't just walk away. It's like having BYU and the church as two things I was raised on. It's like having a mother that you have always loved suddenly start murdering your friends in front of you. And it's like, you don't just say, "Ooh, not my problem." Like, you beg them to stop because you know they're better than this. And so this isn't meant to be hateful, and it isn't meant to be anti-Mormon. It's just trying to hold someone you love to a higher standard. That's all we're trying to do. And I really hope it's taken in that light.
No, I think it will be. And I think you made that clear at the premiere too, when you, in your opening remarks, which Landon missed because he was in the popcorn line, that you talked about sort of welcoming family members and friends that had come to support, you know, their family member or friend in the LGBTQ community, you know, and maybe they didn't quite understand, but maybe this, you know, with an open mind and heart, this film would help them understand. And then you made that comment later, Landon, you're like, this film, it's for anyone. You even said you would take your active, you know, faithful family. Why don't you say just a little bit about that, Lennon, and then we'll close. Because, yeah, it is for everyone. We should make that clear.
I don't post anything about Mormon-ish on my personal Facebook page because so much of my family is active and in the church, and I don't want to offend. But this premiere I posted, nobody responded.
No.
I kind of expected that might be the case, but it was that important to me and it touched me that much that I said, this needs to be put out there. People need to see this. And I posted it on my own personal webpage. I didn't care who saw it or what they think of me, because someone has to stand up and say, this is wrong and people need to see this.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. I'll speak, I guess, for all of us. Like, that means a lot to do that kind of thing. So thank you.
A lot.
It's hard sometimes to put out information that you know your family might not understand, but when it's that important, you have to do it. And so I feel this film is for everyone. And that's why when it gets that wide release on one of the major platforms, yeah, this is going to be really amazing. So, all right. Well, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much, everybody. And please, our listeners and viewers, comment. Let us know what you think. Maybe some of you were actually at the premiere or have, you know, seen the trailer. We'll link the trailer for sure in the show notes so you can kind of get an idea and a flavor, although we also showed it at the beginning. Comment and let us know what you all think about this incredible project and these incredible individuals who are just, like I said, moving the needle. You guys are doing it. Absolutely. Like and subscribe to Mormonish. And if you would like to be made aware of when new episodes come out, you can hit the notification bell. If you would like to help financially support the podcast, we always have links in the show notes to Venmo and PayPal and Mormonish podcast.org. And a new thing, we actually have some merch, unbelievably. We don't have it with us yet, but we have a link. Someday soon, we'll be wearing Mormonish hats and drinking out of a Mormonish mug. So, and you guys can too. Those are the link to that is in the show notes. So thank you once again, David and Jesse and Taylor, and we will see you all next time on Mormonish. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Mormonish. We really appreciate our listeners and would love to hear from you if you have a story you'd like to share. You can email us at mormonishpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and on our website, mormonishpodcast.org. And don't forget to look for us on YouTube and like and subscribe. Keep joyful, everybody.